Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ken. Certainly been a rocky start to the Ravens season here, but the bye week gives you an opportunity to regroup, and Chris Berman used to say, circle the wagons, or rally the wagons. I can't quite remember. I don't think the schedule's quite as easy as some think down the stretch, and I'm certainly concerned what this coaching staff would do up against KC or Buffalo in a potential playoff rematch. But crazier things have happened. So, the Ravens have made miraculous postseason runs before, still holding out hope.
Yeah, well, me too. And that's part of the fun of going to the games and enjoying the rest of the season is that we still hold on to some lingering hope, even though, honestly, when you put your mind to it, it's hard to see this Ravens team putting that run together. But the gamblers certainly think there's still a possibility. Big blow this last week with the loss of Tavius Robinson, which is probably the biggest single piece of injury news they've had, you know, since Lamar anyway, was lost. He had played so many snaps for this team, you know, playing about 80 more snaps than Travis Jones through 5 weeks, which was by far the most of the front five players. So gonna have a hard time replacing that, obviously, and I don't see how they can not directly address it with some sort of move. I thought we'd talk about what are the potential solutions, and I guess you start with two guys they have on the practice squad who play outside linebacker, Malik Cam and Kymen Rucker.
Absolutely. So Tavius also had a pretty significant role on special teams, so that's something else. And it's really just the worst possible timing. The same week that you trade Adafe away, you lose your other outside linebacker. So you're down to three outside linebackers now. It's tough. I do expect that it could be Rucker. I know some folks like what they saw in the preseason from him or Ham. I think that'll be the direct move coming out of the bye. I would say that's the most likely replacement. I don't think they go outside. I think they stay in-house right now.
I would agree with that. They've done that before in terms of finding the extra player, and they've also gotten a little bit creative when they've needed that player, particularly at outside linebacker. And they've had some big-time shortages in the early weeks of seasons in recent years where, you know, Justin Houston or Oway or somebody like that is tremendously overworked because of it. But they could still go to the street and find an outside linebacker. I'm not sure who the best available guy is right now. Probably he's not that exciting. But there could be an elderly or an older outside linebacker of the type that the Ravens have typically done very well working with.
Yes, I did not have a chance to scan the available players. You also got to be careful not to overwork Kyle Van Noy. You know, he's in his mid-30s now, I believe. And, you know, they're in a tough spot. They really are in a tough spot. It makes you kind of second guess the OA trade. You see him go to the Chargers and put up a pretty good game from a pressure standpoint, at least. It's one of those Murphy Law kind of things.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, certainly. And it's not like Gilman didn't play well for the Ravens and allow some things to happen. But yeah, I mean, it was a decent game. He had his first, I guess he might have contributed to a sack. I'm not 100% sure whether he had a half or a full.
He got a full game. And I think four pressures is what I saw. Okay. Four pressures and a full.
That's pretty good.
And pretty limited workload. Yeah.
Yeah. And they could still trade for an outside linebacker. I don't know that a lot of teams are really looking to trade anybody. A lot of teams are facing attrition of their own and feeling the heat to kind of hold on to the outside linebackers they have. I would not want the Ravens to go to a non-contender and really pay through the nose in terms of draft capital, particularly if that player isn't in an optimal to be traded situation where the trading team has to eat cap and thus demands more trade draft capital from the Ravens in exchange.
Yes, certainly been a few names bandied around. Giants have Kayvon Thibodeau, who's still on his rookie deal. Actually has another year after this year on his rookie deal. But they seem like they're kind of trying to make a little bit of a run. You know, they're improving. The other team I think to really look at would be the Miami Dolphins, who have both Jaylen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb, as we remember, suffered that tough injury in the season finale. Was that last 2 years ago? Yeah. Yep. I mean, they're good quality players, but I agree with you. I don't want to part with draft capital, especially if there's a possibility of picking very early in each round.
Right. And that's it. It would matter in any round, you know, but if particularly if they're trading a first, a second, or a third round pick. If they're talking about trading one of the fifth round picks, I'm okay with that. If they're talking about trading a fourth round pick, let's see what we're getting, kind of thing. But you know, if they, I just don't have an appetite for trading any of the top three picks, you know, in a year where the Ravens are 1-5 currently.
Yeah, no way, no way. You're looking at potentially a day one starter in the top of the third round. I mean, that's prime draft capital. So, you know, I think the best thing about the OA trade was that they gained that cap space because, and I'll just make this point quickly, we discussed Julian Blackmon on one of our previous Friday Morning GM shows after the Ardarius Washington injury. He signed with the Saints on a one-year, $3 million deal. He's currently PFF's seventh best-rated safety, and they could have had him. They wouldn't have had to trade for Gilman. Gilman's $2.5 million. And you potentially could be 3-3 if Kyle Hamilton is playing closer to the line of scrimmage in the Buffalo game and maybe the Detroit game. So one of those things where I think they missed the boat there.
Yeah, I don't like to kind of overstate where they might be. The Buffalo game was in play the entire time, and the Detroit game was in play until they blew the fourth down stop on 4th-and-2. But remember, the Ravens kind of backdoored to that game to a one score game. So I'm not gonna like pretend that they could have won the Detroit game if they had Micah Parsons or they had, you know, some other player.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I just think Kyle Hamilton close to line of scrimmage is obviously beneficial for the team, as we saw the previous couple of years and as we saw last game.
Yeah. No, I'm believe me, I'm all for that. And you're absolutely right to say the Ravens blew it in safety, and it's something we've been screaming about all summer long, is that the Ravens didn't have enough safeties. I say you don't have enough when you have three that you really trust. You really need four or five if you want to play dime that you can trust. And this is a team that really wants to put safeties on the field, meaning they're going to play, well, they played 100% big nickel this last week. They didn't play a single snap of standard nickel. So if that's right. If that's your normal package, if that's where you want to play Hamilton, you really need five safeties and not four. Yeah.
I make some of the practice squad decisions or whatever happened a little bit eyebrow raising, because if there is an injury to Starks or to Gilman, you're right back where you were, where Hamilton has to play on the back end again.
Yep. So you are, unless you go with Keandre Jackson back there. I don't think anybody's too excited about that either.
No. Or Sanusi Kane. I mean, he's a special teams only player at this point.
Yep. All right. It'd be nice if they could find that either Jackson or Kane was a guy they could trust with that dime back slot. If they really, you know, are still troubled by what the inside linebacker is giving them in terms of coverage, I actually think Simpson's improved some in that area. Mm-hmm. Then you know, you got to get somebody else. You got to get somebody else in on third down. I think you can afford to have one weak coverage player at inside linebacker, and I think Buchanan probably is it on third down. But you can't afford to have two. And that's where I'm not sanguine about that thing. Now, because they've moved the green dot to Hamilton, they actually have flexibility to move Simpson over to a, you know, a quasi Mike on obvious passing downs, on obvious passing third downs. So they could go with something like that. They don't have to stick with Buchanan on every single play because he's got the green dot.
Yeah, and if Kyle Hamilton's close to the line of scrimmage, he can have the green dot. So I think Buchanan has struggled in coverage. I think Simpson has last two games has been one of the most positive trends that is happening currently. I question why they gave Buchanan a full snap share and didn't give Simpson one snap against Detroit. I could probably nitpick the personnel decisions at every single position group, and that's what happens when you're 1-5.
Yep. Yep, but that's you definitely, your backup might have been better than the players who lost you the game is always a possibility. Yeah. Got an injury report from The Athletic today. I'm sorry, I want to talk about one other thing, and that is the possibility that they might move Urban to outside linebacker. This is a desperate times call for desperate measures situation, but it would not shock me if the Ravens went the all nose tackle route on defense right now, because they're playing two heavies at 1-3 now. Pretty much any play, certainly any early down. They deactivated Peebles, so they're one guy who can rush the passer from the three tech. You know, they've set aside. Now Jones can rush the passer from the three tech if he's not doubled, but you know, I think, you know, having two of three from Jones, Okoye, Jenkins, and say Tupou, if he's reactivated again, might not be a terrible way to manage your defensive line. And then you'd have potentially Brent Urban playing outside linebacker on early down. So you're not trying to get a pass rush started. You know, Van Noy and Green would certainly be the guys on obvious passing downs, but you're also giving some snap relief to Van Noy and to Green for that matter, who, you know, honestly has not lived up to what we'd hoped from his college accolades.
Yeah, it's been a slow start for pretty much most of the rookie class. I'm not opposed to that idea of Urban as the edge setter there. He'd certainly can two gap. I would not be too excited about putting more run stuffers on the field when you're already struggling with a pass rush. I'd rather take the chance that the pass rush specialist can maybe step up on a rundown than a rundown player can make a play if they decide to pass on an early down or a situation that's not an obvious passing down.
Okay, among the players that the Ravens currently have, without going to the street or without going to the trade market and paying up for a three-tech pass rusher, then you'd rather see Peebles and say Jones on an obvious passing situation. And I'm fine with that. I'm just saying a three to make two from your nose tackles on all other downs that are not obvious pass situations is not an unreasonable approach
to their current
dilemma. Yeah.
And I think Okoye is a player worth developing and seeing what you have with him. Any thoughts on the possibility of Trenton Simpson taking a few outside linebackers?
That doesn't make sense to me. He's not big enough. Yeah, okay. I don't like going to a 235 or 240 pound edge. Zach Bond is kind of the prototype guy who was a smaller, quick edge, and he just was never particularly good when he played out there. They move him to inside linebacker, and they realize he's a swan.
Yes,
you know, instead of an ugly duckling. So I think you keep Simpson off ball and let him find his gap with his quickness. Occasionally pick play like they ran with Queen, you know, where he's the under player on a stunt. I don't have a problem with that, but I don't want him. I don't want him to be the edge setter in this group.
Bowser was more in the 250 range, if I recall.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you're planning to drop a guy back, maybe you could, but then you start to tip your hand too if you put Simpson there. So anyway. Onto the injury report, Ken, as you brought up here. The Athletic, I guess, Zarebeck is reporting that Lamar Jackson, Patrick Ricard, Chidobe Awuzie, and Roquan Smith should all return for this Bears game next Sunday on the 26th of October. And, you know, it's been a tough start injury-wise for sure, but if they all return, you have 23 of 24 starters on the field. The only one you're missing is Matabike, and not quite as you know, perfect as the injury situation was last year, but that's not a bad place to be in late October.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is exactly the news the Ravens were desperate to hear, and Jackson is the biggest name there, but hey, it'll be a big deal to get Ricard back. It'll be a big deal to get Roquan back in terms of what he can provide this defense. And I think, you know, with the Ravens shorthanded at cornerback now, returning Awuzie is also a very big deal. So those are four very big names returning for the Ravens. If I really hope this report is on the money and this isn't a reporting Harbaugh's hope or expectation that everyone will be back, which is always a, you know, a potential issue.
Right. Yeah. In other transactional news, we should touch on the Ravens pregame decisions, which occurred after we recorded the last episode. So Reuben Lowry was released in lieu of CJ Okoye. So the Ravens ended up having only four defensive tackles, and three of them were the nose tackle, one tech type. And they got away with it after a week after only having four cornerbacks. And I think they really need to be careful about getting thin because they're going to get caught one of these games. But to Lowry specifically, I was disappointed that he was claimed by Indianapolis. I thought he had a pretty good skill set between some range and pretty good instincts that we saw. He had one bad game. I'm willing to accept one bad game from an undrafted rookie. And I think that something that I question the Ravens for. I think this season in particular, seasons in the past for sure, but this season in particular, I think they're overvaluing special teams. And I have some numbers that I'd like to get to, but I'll let you respond first.
Well, another question is the overvaluing and a quote-unquote established player and not just making a cut there. They've got a lot of money tied up in Jair Alexander right now, but the team needs more safeties than it needs corners probably once they, you know, reach a stable level. Jair Alexander, they obviously have no plan for him. He's behind TJ Tampa on the depth chart now, mm-hmm. And that was made very clear this last week. When with mm-hmm. Jair not playing. Now, Jair is doing some positive things to not be Diontae Johnson in the locker room. Mm-hmm. He led them out of the tunnel in terms of the coming out of the field, which I thought was good. And you know, he seemed to be positive force on the sideline as far as I can tell. But he's a guy the Ravens obviously don't have a lot of confidence in right now.
Yeah. We'll get to our grading here in a little while. And I'll save my thoughts on Alexander for that. As far as the special teams, there was a couple years ago when we were doing the show, we didn't want to have special teams only players. The Ravens now have, based on snap counts from last week, special teams only players, Rasheen Ali, Sanusi Kane, Jake Hummel, LaJonte Wester, Jay Higgins. Ali, according to PFF, is their 38th best special teamer this year so far, for the record. They also have Charlie Kolar, Zaire Mitchell-Payton, Tylan Wallace, Keaton Mitchell, TJ Tampa, Keon Martin, and the elevated Keandre Jackson, who all played at almost half or more than half of the snaps on special teams. If you add in the three specialists, that's 12 of the 48 roster spots dedicated to special teams, 25%. The special team snaps were 10% of the game. And you still have other players that can play special teams that have played special teams, such as Gilman, Walker, when he's healthy, Hill, Buchanan, and Simpson. So I think they just have too many special teamers on this roster. I really do.
I do think there's an overemphasis on it, but you mentioned two groups. And the first group, I was on board with you entirely, with guys who played almost exclusively special teams. And all of those guys have to be considered as deactivations or potential cuts on a weekly basis as you need roster spots or as you need spots, you know, on the 48 for that week. But the second group I didn't agree with you on, because those guys, you need guys who can be legitimate backups at a position. So Jake Hummel, legitimate inside linebacker backup. They've used him several times this year. They don't have to have the insurance policy cashed in to make the insurance worth it in a case of a player like him, particularly, you know, Hummel is a good special teams player. I just, you know, I'm not buying that. TJ Tampa, same thing. I mean, guy's played a lot of corner, but he's also played a ton of special teams. He hasn't been particularly good at corner, and yet they still got him higher on the depth chart. It's definitely a guy that I don't have a problem with him doing. Higgins, yeah, that's another matter. They haven't really tried to get Higgins on the field. It's a little disturbing that he's behind Hummel in terms of the guys they'd want to get on the field, because either Hummel or Higgins could help you this year. Higgins is the only guy who's likely to help you next year in terms of your defense. Right. And so I don't like that kind of move, but that's more of a in-game personnel management, or maybe, you know, they just recognize that Higgins isn't ready, but they don't want to take a chance on cutting him and losing him. I'm okay with that in the case of a guy who has, you know, a nice runway of path to play the defense in the future as well. But, you know, I certainly would not bang on a Charlie Kolar, who's got 79 special team snaps, but he's played a lot of offense as well. He's in the young producer category for me on the offense. Yeah. I mean, he's actually contributing. So, and Keon Martin, I mean, he's played poorly at corner and he's played a lot of special teams. You know, Sanusi Kane is another matter. If he can't do anything at all defensively, then he's a guy who I would really have questions about.
And your point's well said, Ken. And let me try to sharpen what I'm trying to say. I wouldn't have elevated Keandre Jackson when he already had that many special teamers on the roster. You could have elevated Okoye, and you could have kept Lowry in the fold if you did it that way. So, and to put some numbers behind it, the Ravens, you know, kickoff rules, so new emphasis, more special teamers. I think it was Harbaugh's idea to have that kickoff rule, if I recall. Anyway, the Ravens have the 11th worst return average when they receive the ball, and they're allowing the 15th worst when they're covering their own kickoff. That's not including loops, missed kicks either. That's just when they're actually field the ball. They're 15th, so they're middle of the pack there, and they're below average on returns, and they got a lot of players on this 48 for that to be the outcome.
And frankly, you have to include Loop's stuff in there because he basically mitigates the value of those extra special teams players you have. So if he's screwing it up, that still reduces the value of the special teams players you have to cover kicks. So that's bothersome. I mean, what you said, the 15th worst is like directly middle of the pack. You can be worse than that, but that's not it's not where the Ravens want to be. It's not where the Ravens would expect to be given the investment they made in special teams.
Exactly. Yeah. Other practice squad moves?
Other practice squad moves. Either way, why don't we had the deactivation of Peebles for the game. We had the elevations of Huntley and Jackson for the game, which I assume people are aware of. The deactivation of Peebles probably bothers me more. That I'm always concerned about playing with only four on the defensive line. I think they've heard us say this enough that, and certainly heard me say it on the defensive show as well, that we probably don't need to bash it any further or soapbox it any further. But I hate that risk. And in the same game where they played four defensive linemen, they only had four outside linebackers available too. And then one of those got hurt. And then Urban went down as well. So
they have three defensive linemen, three outside linebackers.
Yeah, it looked like a nightmare.
Yeah.
You want to talk to me, Jones?
Yes, please. So report came out that he just started doing pass protection snaps. I guess his shoulder would not allow him to set his hands where he wanted. Clock's ticking. The clock is ticking here. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes retroactively to the season ending route.
I would be a little bit surprised by that, and it would represent an enormous breach of judgment by the coaching staff if that happened. And I haven't been hugely – most of the things with injuries, I'm basically that a lot of that was not foreseeable. And so when they lose players to injuries, that doesn't get them off the hook for not having proper depth by position group, but it gets them off the hook in terms of not performing as well as they should have. Like in Emory Jones's case, I just can't accept it. It seemed to me the obvious play for this year, if you're going to get, let's say a quarter or 20% of an expected season from Emory Jones in terms of actual quality play, would have been to just NFI him for the whole year. Now, I don't know where, if there would have been a grievance that would have been possible or exactly what the potential outcome would have been had that happened, but him not pass blocking right now, either he had to wait another 3 weeks to be able to start his process, or they needed to just which would give them 3 more weeks now to kick the can down the road, or he had to sit out the whole year. And I think the Ravens probably in this next 3 weeks will know if they're sellers or buyers. If they're sellers, I mean, Emory Jones should be sitting out the whole year and playing. I don't know what the Ravens or what Jones's power is to fight that designation. Because he might be able to do it with a grievance or something, but I bet it's addressable with money, that they could just say, "Hey, we're paying you your full salary on your NFI thing, but you got to promise us you're not going to go to the league with a grievance on this kind of thing."
And you get one more year of team control that way.
Yeah.
So, well said, Ken. If they do activate him, and I don't think it's a likelihood that I think it's more likely that they activate him with all the pressure on the offensive line, and we'll get back to that sooner. I think they want to see what they have in him eventually, but it might take a couple weeks where he's activated the roster, but he doesn't get a jersey on game day because he can't pass protect yet. I would look, so if that happens, they need to release somebody. I would look to Zaire Mitchell-Payton. I mentioned it last week. I don't think he's benefiting the team very much. The other one would be Rasheen Ali. I know you could probably throw Higgins in there, but I think Higgins has more long-term upside than those two do.
I wouldn't throw Higgins in there. I'd do exactly what you're saying. The first guy get rid of, and Ricard actually has been eating up a roster spot the whole time. So if he's able to play, then Zaire Mitchell-Payton is gone. I mean, it's really just that simple. He hasn't added one blessed thing in terms of incremental value that you can't hope to get from Ricard. So I don't see any reason why ZMP would still be on the roster. But there's a roster spot to be created there for a different player, and that's probably Jones, who takes ZMP's roster spot. And then all that means is he'll be inactive on game day, and Ricard would be active And it is kind of a perfect isosceles triangle there of spots being filled.
The deactivation shuffle. I agree with you completely there. Couple practice squad moves if you're ready to move on. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was released.
It's incredible. He was the future. He was the future of this team.
Who could have seen that coming? Really weird fit from the start. If you, out of all the whole 2,000 players in the league or whatever, he might be the worst one to have in a Harbaugh locker room. He made some comment that coming to Baltimore was his only choice, and then he did something where he said he wanted to go back to Philly or something of the sort. So I do think that leaves him a little short at safety there now because they don't have Lowry anymore and they don't have Gardner Johnson. So that's the first one.
But just to respond to that for a second, I mean, it shows you where the league is in terms of attrition, that a player like Lowry is picked up immediately by the Colts. I don't think there's a lot sitting out on other teams' practice squads in terms of, you know, game-ready players who can really help you at safety. They're very unfortunate. Now, the player that might be out there on some team is a guy who can play dime back, because Lowry is really more of a split field guy, or at least that was the hope. But there might be a guy who can play dime back that's out there on somebody else's practice squad not being used or potentially valued as much as you would want.
I agree there. So Josh Tupu, the nose tackle, was re-signed. Again, he's been on the team. Second stint on the practice squad. Was he elevated once? Or I think only once. Or was it twice?
Kansas City, sure it was once. Maybe one other. Yeah. They've got four nose tackles who total over 1,400 pounds of total weight. Well over 1,400, wow. Actually. It's like 1,430. I doubt there's ever been four players active for a game who have weighed more. And I really don't think there's ever been three who were heavier than Tupou, Okoye, and Jenkins against the Chiefs, because there Jones is out. Jones weighs only 341 pounds. All the other guys are 350 plus, between 350 and 370, actually.
Yeah, a lot of beef there. A lot of beef in the trenches. Should help the run game. Should help keep offensive linemen off of Roquan Smith when he does return, hopefully. JT Gray, another special teamer. Linked up with the Ravens about midway through September, if I recall, and he has now been claimed by the Denver Broncos.
So practice squad injured pretty much his whole time with the Ravens, which was unfortunate. And the Broncos claimed him. McFarland and I had a little bit of a talk about him yesterday when we were recording a pod, and he seems to think Denver is going to take him. He'll be inactive with Denver for a couple of weeks while he finishes his healing process, but they think that within 3 weeks he'll be ready to play, which is why they made a 3-week commitment to him. So he makes a little more money. It's hard to keep a guy from signing with another team when he's going to make basically an extra $33,000 per game, I believe it is, in terms of being on the regular roster as opposed to where he's. Might even be more for a veteran like him.
Plus a chance to play. I mean, everybody wants to play, right? Yeah, you're looking at this, you know, 53, and don't see maybe as many special team snaps here as you would see somewhere else. So as you note here, it looks like one open practice squad spot. Any ideas on position where you'd like to see that allocated?
Okay, real quickly, they had a 17th spot, which was Okoye, but they lost that spot when they moved him up to the active roster, where they don't get that. So they have a 16th spot still. Yes, exactly, international, IPPP. They have a 16th spot now that they haven't filled, as far as I know, yet. I already think they have some guys, you know, one guy anyway that they don't really need in terms of the offensive line. I'd be looking to, Dellinger is still a guy I would probably try and bring back if there was a way. If the Ravens will carry 10 offensive linemen for a while now with Emory Jones back, and they'll deactivate two, which will probably be Vincent and Jones. But if they find they have to revert to IR on Jones, then I'd definitely be looking to add another interior offensive lineman with potential 2026 and beyond value. And Dellinger is an example, but he's not the only one out there. I just don't believe Jarrad Penning is that guy.
Yes, I agree with you. Co-sign that. As far as some offensive line depth would be a good place. The other place would be safety because you're a little bit thinner than you were. So, I think that concludes that segment, Ken.
Okay, so listen, we did want to talk this week, and we have a bunch of mailbag questions we want to get to as well. We're going to defer discussion of potential trades to next week, so there'll still be an opportunity to talk about that. There also may have been some trades that occurred. It's certainly possible that the Ravens are feeling good about the injury returns. They may, in fact, pull the trigger on a trade. But anyway, what we wanted to look at was Eric DaCosta's offseason acquisitions. There are 8 significant ones, and we left out some guys who re-signed for the Ravens like Tylan Wallace or Ben Cleveland or Patrick Ricard, not including those. But we're talking about guys they went and got from the outside. And we're going to go through each one of these, and we'll just give a grade. And I'll let you go first, Voss, and there'll be a little bit of Delphi-ing here, unless you want to alternate going first on these.
Let's alternate.
But alternate going first.
Looks like you put them in alphabetical here.
Yeah.
So Jair Alexander, 1 year, $4 million, has not fared well. I'm probably being a little bit generous, but I would give this signing a C because I think the upside was worth the risk for a $4 million player with that kind of pedigree. I think they really hope to get some ball hawking out of him, some takeaway production. He showed it in camp, hasn't shown it in the regular season. So I'm going to see you on Alexander.
I think it's too generous. And I would agree with you in terms of the thought that went behind the thing, but I think he also had this injury history that's played out more seriously. I think that the likelihood of him getting old was a lot more, even though the last 4 years he played about half the games and been very good when he did play, which was something I think the Ravens liked about him. But he's been so bad. And I think what we're seeing now is that he's not necessarily unhealthy. It's that he's not good. And that's what's keeping him off the field. So I'm in an F on Alexander.
Fair enough. Move on to the next one.
Let's go to Ouzier as the second one. Other than health, I'm very happy. He's been rock solid, incredibly cheap. Probably an A-. I could see a B on him because of the health concerns, but we knew what the health concerns were going in. I think he's exceeded the expectation there. I'd probably say A-. It was a fantastic price for a player of his quality.
Yes, $1.3 million. I go on with the B+. He's their highest graded corner, I believe. And, he missed the last game and he struggled slightly against the Texans, but he's been rock solid, as you said. Better than around the RB caliber for, I think, a lesser price.
Yeah.
Next up, DeAndre Hopkins. 1 year, $5 million with some void years tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
I give this one a solid A, a very solid A. I think he's been the Ravens' best offensive player, and I hope he gets more opportunity.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
In the second half, unless he's part of a trade package to acquire some capital.
I would agree. I would agree in terms of generally what you said there, and that he might have been the Ravens' best offensive player so far. Certainly in yards per target, he's right up there towards the top of the league. I'd say a B. His playing time is just not what you might hope for. So he's played about 14 snaps a game or something. It's a relatively low number. So they're not getting a lot of playing time out of him. They're playing him a fair amount. You've been one who's been quite negative on mid-range contracts being paid. I really don't like one-year wide receiver contracts, but Hopkins does represent the absolute best of those based on what he's done. And just the trust between him and Lamar, and even him and, you know, Cooper Rush and Huntley, has been very special in terms of his ability to not let the football fall into the hands of the opponent.
Mm-hmm. Playmaker. Yeah. Just to clarify, I'm more against, second contract mid-range.
Because as opposed to one-year deals.
Yes. So Broderick Washington type is the one that I would try to avoid. A one-year flyer for a guy with, you know, multiple Pro Bowls on his resume, I think that's worth the flyer for 1 year because you're not locked in.
Okay. That's fine. I don't think that worked at all for Odell, but and price was the problem, not production. In Hopkins' case, it's certainly not production. And if anything would drop the thing, and it's a difference between a B and a D acquisition between Hopkins and Odell, it would be that the amount of playing time he's getting that's the issue. Let's move on. Talk about Jake Hummel. Obviously, mostly a special teams linebacker. He's already seen the field and played a fair amount in Kansas City. To just play some backup linebacker, backup Mike. I guess am I first on this one? Or are you first? I forget. Doesn't
You're
matter.
First.
Okay. I would say Hummel is probably a B minus or to C plus acquisition. He's nothing special. It's good that they didn't get completely tooled on a special teams player that they picked up. If you're gonna go find a special teams guy, get a guy at the vet minimum value, check, and get a guy who can play a lot of snaps on special teams. He leads the Ravens special teams units with 141, and he plays five units of special teams, mm-hmm. by the way. A lot of people play four. It's actually very rare to play five, but he's on the field goal block unit also.
So believe it or not, I actually gave this one an A. Mm-hmm. He had the block punt, which was one of the plays, you know, big turnover takeaways of the season. And I'm okay having one or two special teams only guys. I just don't want five or six or eight. So I'm gonna
Delphi up to a B plus. I'd kind of forgotten the block punt. And he's also been by far the Ravens' best special teams player.
Yes. Yes. So, completely. Let's move on now to Jenkins. Eric DaCosta signed him to replace Michael Pierce. I think he's done a fantastic job. He's exceeded my expectations. 1 year, $1.8 million. I'm going to give him an A minus for John Jenkins. Price and production combination.
All right. I mean, good. I think he's been a very reasonable price for the player. He's not super cheap, by the way. He makes almost $3 million, I think it is.
I thought I saw 1.8, but maybe I'm mistaken.
I'll look it up while we're going here. But I would go with a B on Jenkins. You know, good player certainly, but not exactly what you'd hope from a pass rush perspective. Despite the thing, 1 year, $2.75 million. Oh, that was with the Raiders. Let's see. Yeah, 1 year, $1.85 million, according to this. So I think we looked at this during the preseason, and there was enough savings that you could still like bring on another young player and not worry too much about the amount of
yes,
guaranteed with Akoya, money there was.
Yeah. When we were talking about it, and the guy that went to the Bucks, I can't.
Yeah. Yes. The Nebraska nose tackle, Hutmaker.
I thought he was from the SEC. But oh, Hubmaker was a different one. There was a guy from the SEC that went to the Bucks also.
Oh yeah, you're right, Jason Jones.
Yes, that's the one. That's
yeah.
But yeah, again, Jenkins has exceeded my expectations. Had the big trifecta play this last week. Again, one of the best plays of the season on defense.
Fair enough. I'm not Delphi-ing off of B, but I think it's they got value with him certainly, and they've really needed it in terms of what he's been. I might be being a little bit tight on these grades. Joe Noteboom. Is the next player up, and I guess I'll be up first in terms of grading him. He's been terrible, you know, a 54 aggregate raw score, which would put him basically below the replacement level or just below it in terms of what he's done. The incredible amount is he's actually been a little bit better as I've scored it than Ronnie Stanley for the full season.
Wow.
Which is really bad, by the way, for Stanley, but Stanley's had two games that have tremendously dropped his score. Where he's played a total of 36 snaps and gotten four total points. So he's graded out 11 for those two games in raw score and 50 for the year. Wow. And Noteboom at 54. I mean, the Ravens have a big left tackle problem right now. There's no doubt about it. They have a huge left tackle problem. But Note Boom, you know, you takes your chances, I guess, with a player who's a backup left tackle. They really has never played particularly well in his long tenure with the Rams. So, you know, is it a, it's probably a D acquisition for my part that they should have expected a basically a replacement level player or a little bit above that. And they got a little bit below that.
Yeah. 1 year, $2 million. So he seems to have a little bit of a boomerang to his game, where preseason he played well one game, then he played, fell off the table the next game. He had one regular season game, which was decent. Then he had one terrible one after it, if I recall. I'll go C minus here. You're not going to get a really high quality backup left tackle, really, unless you draft and develop somebody. There's none of those guys out there in free agency. Having him, even if he's replacement level or a tick below, it's still worth something just because that position is so scarce.
Yeah, okay. That's certainly fair enough. I just think the C minus is too high for me because they got less than the value that they could reasonably have expected based on his past.
So, yeah, okay. Yeah. Next one up is Basil Okoye. You know, we've seen glimpses. We've seen some issues with technique. To be expected from a player that didn't play in college at all. You know, to me, it's another maybe C-plus acquisition.
Okay, I'd go an A on Okoye. Okay. Now, here's why. It's not for his play this year, because his play this year is going to be whatever it was. This guy looks fantastic in terms of available runway and what he could become. Even just from camp, he's improved tremendously. He looked like he was having a lot of wind problems in camp and had to get on the stationary bike and was having to take off the field after just a limited number of plays. That didn't look good, but he's looked much better in the actual games. And he's been a guy who's, frankly, set his feet better and held his ground a little better than what I expected. This is not unexpected that you get this in a guy who comes from Nigeria, never played college ball, discovered in a camp, converted basketball player, couple tough years on the practice squad for the Chargers, which obviously did not seem like he learned a lot of football there. I'm sure he learned as much as he ever learned in terms of, you know, actual learning the basics kind of thing. But the Ravens are going to harvest this in terms of his value, and he's going to be around next year. He's going to be part of their defensive line plans, and it's almost like having an extra draft pick. I'd say in his case, it's like having an extra maybe fifth round pick that you're taking a gamble on.
Yeah, I'll modify and go to a B. On Okoye, good points for sure. You want to intro Rush?
Sure. Well, Cooper Rush, a lot of people have been misstating the value of Cooper Rush's contract because he has to meet some incentives, which he's not going to do to earn the most possible money. But he signed for two. I'm sorry. Say again.
People were claiming it was eight, and I think it's only six.
It's 6.2 over 2 years. And even that, I mean, they can release him next year and save some of that money. So it's not really even that much, although there is some void money in his deal as well. But he doesn't have any guaranteed money this next year, only this year. I'd say he's a hasn't completely fallen apart, but he hasn't been good by any stretch at all. I would say that some of the interceptions, particularly against Kansas City, had who do you have three interceptions? That's a Houston game, right?
Houston. Yeah. Three against Houston, two against the Rams,
I believe. All right, put me down for a D on the Cooper Rush acquisition.
Yeah, I'm a little harsher on this one. This one's an F for me, my only F. Okay. He was pitched as a guy that could bridge the gap if Lamar missed a couple games. He has not lived up to that. He doesn't seem to be a scheme fit very much. And I don't think he's an upgrade on Huntley. I don't think Huntley's necessarily worlds better than him. It got a little spark with Huntley last week, but why pay more than vet minimum for vet minimum type of play?
Okay, well that's certainly fair enough. I don't feel the need to go down from a D, honestly. But you make some good points there, and I would. Part of the unfairness about this is that you can't have Cooper Rush expectations that he's going to win one out of two football games unless the rest of the team is basically okay and ready to go other than Lamar. And that's just not the case right now. I mean, they've got an offensive line that has a lot of problems across the board, but as the major injury at left tackle, which a quarterback like Cooper Rush is much more impacted by than Lamar. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. it is what it is, but I agree with that point. But his play individually has just been pretty rough at times.
Abysmal. Yeah, abysmal. Yeah. okay, well, let's jump out to the mailbag if we can. Like I said, we're going to talk about trades next week and where the Ravens might make sense. Got one from Yu Cole here. He says, I don't think it's fair to say that the seasons that Henry and Saquon are having show that the RB position is devalued again. Look at what Bijan and Taylor are doing for their teams. Okay, I'm not sure if he's responding to something we said or if
I think I said that last episode or the one before. So I think, yeah, I could. I mean, it's a fair point that Bijan, Jonathan Taylor is having a great team. He's my running back on my fantasy team. So happy by that. Bijan has 3 first round offensive linemen on his squad. So I still think it's a little bit dependent, and you don't want to pay $15 million for Henry or 20 plus for Saquon if they're dependent on their offensive line. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on Lamar Jackson in Henry's case is would it be an indication that you could go elsewhere and get a slightly above the vet minimum player? You know, they did it with vet min players for basically for a long time, and I'm not talking about exactly the vet minimum, but I'm talking like a couple million dollars over the vet minimum players like Gus Edwards and Hill and whatnot, and they're some of the most successful running backs in the history of the National Football League that have played with Lamar all through his career, even the bad ones, even the over the hill guys, you know, have been good. Yeah. So to me, the other thing about that I would point in your favor is that I think that if your guys are good every other year, every third year, that probably is another reason why, you know, you're better off just taking your shot with a young back time after time, after time. You know, draft a guy like Cam Scatabo, a guy you can get a little later in the draft and make that move.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the data points are out there. I think last year was the first year that a high-paid running back won the Super Bowl. It was pretty much for 10 years or so, no team was paying their running back more than a little bit above vet minimum, or they had a guy on a rookie contract, and they weren't necessarily even high-drafted rookies. And you see players go down with injury and the backup running back comes in and does 90% of the production. That happens all the time. So let's go to Minion Hunter here. Has anyone done a salary cap analysis of the Ravens games? How much of their cap is either on IR or not playing due to injury by game? Poundstar hockey data / stats analysis do this routinely due to a loophole where there was no cap during the playoffs.
Okay. I'm not aware of the hockey one specifically. I mean, the big thing about the Ravens was, what, 2 games ago, I guess against the Texans, where they had their 6 highest paid players out. Yeah. If that qualifies as cap analysis, then, you know, that certainly existed and was very frustrating.
Yeah, you know, the injuries are unpredictable. Last year, and I think the year before, I think I heard last year they were the healthiest team in the whole league. So this year they haven't been as healthy. I feel bad for a team like San Fran. You got Bosa and Warner both out for the year. I mean, they're talking out for the year, not out for 2-3 games. Right. So, you know, it is what it is. You got to overcome. But now, like we said, they got 23 of 24 starters, and they're heading into a softer portion of the schedule. So I don't think injury should be a valid excuse. And hopefully that's impetus for stacking some wins now.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Although 23 of 24, do you mean 21 of 22? Or is there 2 others that you're considering like special?
Yes, 22. Sorry, I did it wrong. Yeah, not counting the specialist, my fault.
All right, let's go to Chaz Blackwell III. Are you concerned about how the Ravens have been using activations the last 2 weeks? I think we've kind of addressed this earlier. And you made the point that they kind of lost Reuben Lowry because of the activations they have. I'll finish the question, then I'll let you respond to this. It seems like the coaching staff has made some risky/stupid decisions in regards to activations and having Peebles inactive, Vincent inactive given the Stanley situation, and activating Mitchell/Ali while hardly playing either one.
Yeah, I think there's been some personnel mismanagement on this team. And activations is where I would point to probably the most, and also some who's getting the reps in the games. like I said, they're going to get caught if they keep trying to pinch pennies at one position. Pinch pennies probably isn't the right analogy or the pinch right slots. Term there. Yeah. But it's, you know, sacrifice is smart. Put Justice Ellard and play a special team snap last week. Why not let him play whoever snaps needed to be played and make sure you have five defensive linemen?
And you can use Kevin Mitchell, Keaton Mitchell on offense if you do that. And you can probably cut loose Ali to make that spot. Wins around if you do that. And my big thing is not activating five defensive linemen. So I'm completely with you in terms of not having Peebles inactive. I think you make a good point about the Vincent deactivation. I think there may be more of an indication there. The Ravens are not ready to put Vincent on the field at left tackle for a regular season game. I do think that time is likely to come at some point this year, where the Ravens stand record-wise and how this season may finish.
Yeah, we might as well transition to Angelo's 85's question here because it's kind of right up that alley. Hi, Ken and Voss, how much would you attribute the following to the inconsistency of the O-line out of 100%? Tough schedule, no Ricard, player injury / regression, or bad coaching?
Okay,
let's do that first, and then we'll hit the second part.
Yeah, so the schedule, Ricard, injury and regression, that's kind of a big category, and coaching. Okay, let me go with that. I would say, yeah, that's significant. This is actually, each of them is a not insignificant component of the total. Okay, I mean, I'll tell you what I would put it at. I'd put it as 20% on tough schedule, 30% on no Ricard, 30%. I think it just changes the Ravens' offensive scheme entirely. Player injury and regression, maybe another 30. They definitely have not gotten what they'd expected out of Stanley and some other, Linderbaum, for example. And bad coaching, it's hard for me to put a lot on that, but I don't think they have quite the offensive line coach that they had when they had Joe D. So I put 20 in coaching. I do think he might have helped us in terms of getting Vincent. I'm not convinced that Warhop is the right guy to go on. I think he's one of the coaches who may get replaced this offseason.
Yes. So I think the majority is on bad coaching. I'm at 40% on bad coaching. I think it's not only the technical aspects that Warhop is maybe not instilling into his players. I'm not an offensive line guru, but I have seen some things that are concerning. Joe D was so good for so long at developing young players and getting their technique, you know, sharpened to the point where it was repeatable snap after snap. But I would also say some of it is on Monken and his coaching. And
good point.
Not just being predictable. I mean, we saw what was on the goal line, that disaster on the goal line last week. That was very predictable, you know, and that offensive linemen benefit from deception for sure. And there's also been certain plays where there's mostly deep routes and they don't have a check down, and offensive linemen are expected to block for longer. I will go 25% injury regression, 15% no Ricard. Ricard definitely helped, especially Rosengarten with chip blocks. And then I'll also go to 25% on a tough schedule, because when you look at it, Browns have a good front. Lions have a good front. Chiefs have a couple good guys. Texans have a very good front. Rams have a pretty good front. So they have faced a tougher schedule, maybe more than I thought about before this question from Ange.
Foss, if anybody accused you of not giving 105%, they just have to total up your numbers here and realize that you gave 105%.
Maximum effort for me.
All right, well, fair enough. Let's go back to Bizarro's question. Oh, darn, my screen.
Well, I'm sorry. I just had one more thought. The second part, thoughts of cutting Noteboom and playing Vincent. Oh. And I'd also want to ask, first of all, let me ask you this, Ken. What do you attribute Linderbaum's regression to? Because I think he has clearly regressed.
Okay. So part of the issue is that I don't really blame it on the guards, who are both pass blocking at a level that could be argued is higher than he is. Okay. So it's hard for me to say, you know, that the two guys who are having more success pass blocking are causing the problem for the one guy who's had problems in the past, but is at his worst career year all of a sudden in year four. Now, I definitely would not say there's not been one time this year or, you know, any kind of hyperbolic statement about Falele or Voorhees letting down Linderbaum. But I think it's some of it is Linderbaum's fault. I think Linderbaum is just that's an area where he hasn't been particularly good his whole career.
Yeah, I agree. And I think coaches have caught on to that. And he was supposed to be the guy that elevated the guards. And he's not necessarily doing a great job of that. Thoughts on cutting Noteboom and playing Vincent?
I don't think they'll cut Noteboom. I think they need to get through the season. And he's a replacement level left tackle that they need to hope can actually start playing at the replacement level. He's only a little bit below it. I mean, he's really a little bit. So,
I'd like to see Vincent at some point this year if Ronnie continues to struggle with this ankle injury, whether that is because the Ravens are in, let's see what we have next year mode, seller type mode, or just let's see what he can do. You know, we saw some good things from him. He is raw, but, you know, you definitely don't want to play him against Cleveland, but if there's maybe a lesser opponent, you can cut his teeth a little bit.
I don't know if the businesses you've worked in, I know you've been a restaurateur and you've done some mortgage work in the past in your life, but we have a saying in actuarial work, and I think it goes with a lot of other white collar desk jobs, is you might as well do your work so you can start on your finish your work so you can start on your corrections. And this really helps with means a lot with players like Vincent, who need to be given a chance to fail forward. You know, they need to fail so they can learn from their mistakes to move on from that. And I do think there's value to seeing if they get Vincent, you know, 50 to 150 snaps this year would be really nice. I don't know if they're going to be able to get it done. But I think it would be nice if they could.
Well said. Well said. Okay. And you want to get Bizarro? Yeah, great question.
Bizarro's play here. Guard play has been discussed a lot recently among the flock, with the Ravens having seemingly tried to moneyball the position and paying for it with bad end variance this year. If I had to choose between paying Roquan $100 million or splitting that money on some OL, I'd much rather pay the offensive line. But curious in general, if you agree that the Ravens may need to consider whether they've sufficiently prioritized the offensive line or hung on too long to developmental players. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. He's saying we should spend more on the offensive line. I agree they should spend more assets on the offensive line probably than they did this year. Very unfortunate to lose Dellinger, but he wasn't a big component of the assets. The other thing they did was draft a guy in the third round who wasn't ready to play and draft a guy in the fourth round who was a pure developmental guy who they never had any reasonable expectation would be playing even before maybe 2027. Mm-hmm. So when those are your three draft picks, you know, it's a how you allocated those assets. The, you know, is the three, the actually it was a five for Vincent, I guess, an early five and a seven. Is that too little to put in the offensive line? Maybe not. Is the money too little to put in at guard? No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you got to figure out as a GM where you're not going to spend. You have to figure that out. And it's a reasonable choice to decide I'm not going to spend at guard. I'm going to try and depend on my great center to turn things around or to help these guards. And I'm going to try and depend on my great offensive line coaching. You know, however, whatever kind of air quotes you want to put around great there to help these guys develop. And Ravens had tremendous success developing mid and late round offensive linemen in the past. So it's not hard to see why they took the chance.
Yes. I think the issue was maybe they developed them with Joe D and they were hoping to develop them with Warhop. And I still think Carball should have maybe looked up at that position considering he was an emergency mid-August hire. I certainly agree that Roquan, I think Roquan was a mistake. Everybody knows that. I believe you and I did the instant reaction podcast, both when they traded for him, especially when they signed him. And if my memory serves, we both were against it at the time because of the opportunity cost they would present down the road. And now here we are with Roquan doesn't really have a special skill set anymore. He's regressed and, you know, he's very smart and he has good intangibles and he's good at giving the speech before the game. So I definitely think that would have been a place where you don't spend. The other place not to spend is running back. $15 million for Derrick Henry is equivalent to the 15th highest paid offensive guard in the league. I remember years ago, I think Garnett had a space and I asked you to rank the offensive line in order of importance. And you said left tackle was one and right guard was two. And I was surprised by that. I thought right tackle would have been two. So you could have had, for example, Kevin Zeitler for $9 million this year, currently the 19th graded offensive guard in the NFL by PFF, compared to 41st and 45th for Voorhees and Falele, respectively. The other thing is just a lack of competition for those two guard spots. They signed Ben Cleveland. Harbaugh clearly doesn't want to play him, even though you see if your grading stands, but he's been in that range of, you know, average starter like these other two. So what was the point of signing Cleveland, just to sit on the bench for an emergency guard? And they literally penciled these two guys in without really putting them through the paces of a competition. So I think that was probably the biggest mistake.
Yeah, I mean, they claimed there was a competition early on in camp, and then they kind of decided, and they haven't done rotational play. This is something that Warhop is coming out and said he doesn't like. He likes to have a starter and a backup, not a rotational combination that they're bringing in. But I would agree. I thought, you know, Dellinger was supposed to get time at center and be a backup there, but they've really decided Bullock is their guy going forward. So I guess I understand that's the way they're going, and they've got potentially a big runway for Bullock. He's a player I'd love to see. He's a player I'd love to see. But, you know, honestly, I want to see him at center to see if he's the reasonable replacement for Linderbaum, who they've got a huge financial decision coming up on. The guards, they're not large wagers. Neither of those guards is a large wager. And if you're looking at PFF and grading the players that way, please look at the pass blocking and run blocking separately. The combined scores are bullshit. They are complete horseshit. They overweight run blocking, which is should be just the opposite way for both center and for guard.
The worst example of that is Linderbaum.
Yeah. Well, he is. System. I mean, he's the beneficiary of it. And Falele, you're talking about guards who can block. I mean, Falele is, I think, the 14th best of 57 pass blockers at guard. Not just at right guard. This is at all guard of guys who played, you know, 50% of the snaps of the top player, I think, is how they do it. So if you're looking at the offensive line and seeing where the problems are, left tackle is probably number one right now, and center might be number two. Right now, Voorhees has rope from playing 3 out of 4 good games in a row, and Falele has been fairly consistent in terms of where he's been as, you know, a low C player, but not as bad as they've gotten out of left tackle and center. In a way, you know, they have an opportunity with Linderbaum to move on, to see what they can do, or to sign him cheap, any of those three. But they cannot take the Linderbaum's going to save the offensive line approach and give him Creed Humphrey money and try and rebuild the line that way. I'd be so opposed.
I'm concerned. I'm concerned. We've seen some patterns that would indicate that they might try to do that. Just while we're wrapping up here, since we are at the bye week, I do think that the critique – go ahead, Ken. I'm sorry.
We had one more question from Brendan Way. I want to make sure we got it. It came in late. Hey, Ken Voss, it's only been one game, but the defense looked a lot more sound with Hamilton wearing the green dot instead of Roquan. Who do you think is more likely to wear the green dot going forward, or maybe a rotation of defensive callers? Don't think it'll be a rotation. I would still say if Roquan's back on the field, he probably wears the green dot, and that allows you – you know, when Hamilton's playing a strong safety or playing a deep safety in a – four-man situation, you can still have him back there. I think it's more likely that that's the way they'd go. But Hamilton, going forward, if Roquan does not re-sign, and if he is not retained after the season, which is a possibility, then I think Hamilton will have it going forward, probably for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I always liked it better when the safety was wearing it. I don't know, the defense seemed to perform a little bit better going back a few years to Wink Martindale, I believe, had one of the safeties wearing it for a while. I agree with you that I think they'll go back to Roquan. You know, this franchise is very stubborn, and they paid Roquan all this money to be their defensive leader. They're going to continue to go down that road. John Harbaugh went to bat for Daniel Falele. He's going to continue to go down that road. I mean, you could go down the list. That's how they operate. But I just wanted to make a kind of a conclusion type of point. I think critiquing Eric DaCosta for not – bringing in more competition on the interior of the offensive line, particularly the offensive guard, is a fair critique. I think critiquing him for not getting a viable third safety that would allow Kyle Hamilton the freedom to make impact plays closer on scrimmage is fair. I don't think not investing enough in the pass rush is necessarily a fair. You had above average defensive tackles. You had two 10 sack guys coming back. You had two pass rushers in the draft. Mm-hmm. You had, and just pass defense as a whole, you brought in two cover corners, drafted a safety, had another good safety. So if you're looking at why is the Ravens 1-5 and who's to blame, injuries, coaching, and roster construction. Roster construction is easily the third reason. The other two are much higher on my list.
Okay, I understand that. To me, it's injuries will expose all sorts of coaching inability. Mm-hmm. I mean, because injuries just they rob you of any opportunity to compete. And unfortunately, it just happens every once in a while, and you live through these seasons. But it's amazing how much your coaches look better when they have their good players on the field, and they can push the right buttons.
True.
All right. Voss, always great doing the show with you. Great talking football. We had an extra long show today. Did not really anticipate this. We thought we had trimmed the material a little bit, but great questions. Really appreciate the folks contributing to hashtag film study mailbag. Keep them coming. Very high quality questions, and we want to get to those each week. Tell folks where they can reach you online, and a little blurb for your restaurant as well.
Yeah, sure. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis. I'm sorry, not Beatdown. I confused myself. Vasilis Fiammata, Fiammata. Fiammata is the name of our restaurant, 2900 Baltimore Boulevard. TheFiammata.com is the website, Italian restaurant and lounge.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, thanks for your contributions and questions. And hang on. Try and listen to this show and the others on that I'm putting out on a weekly basis. Really appreciate that. And if you have any questions, hit me up with hashtag film study mailbag. I'll try and get to them on whatever show that they're really appropriate to. For Vasilis, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.